Part 10, Conclusion. It is almost too easy to bring back Bob Novak and Secretary O'Neill for another kick, but I can't resist. Marxist class warfare? Robber baron rhetoric? Well, the pages above recount the class warfare waged by the robber barons themselves. If their kind tend to squeal like pigs when we talk about class, it's because they've been stuck. But all the squealing in the world won't change the facts. But what are the implications of the above facts for our movement? It is commonly acknowledged that the manorial economy was founded on force. Although you will never see the issue addressed by Milton Friedman, intellectually honest right libertarians like Rothbard acknowledge the role of the state in creating European feudalism and American slavery. Rothbard, drawing the obvious conclusion from this fact, acknowledged the right of peasants or freed slaves to take over their 40 acres and a mule without compensation to the landlord. But we have seen that industrial capitalism, to the same extent as manorialism or slavery, was founded on force. Like its predecessors, capitalism could not have survived at any point in its history without state intervention. Coercive state measures at every step have denied workers access to capital, forced them to sell their labor in a buyer's market, and protected the centers of economic power from the dangers of the free market. To quote Benjamin Tucker again, landlords and capitalists cannot extract surplus value from labor without the help of the state. The modern worker, like the slave or the serf, is the victim of ongoing robbery. He works in an enterprise built from past stolen labor. By the same principles that Rothbard recognized in the agrarian realm, the modern worker is justified in taking direct control of production and keeping the entire product of his labor. In a very real sense, every subsidy and privilege described above is a form of slavery. Slavery, simply put, is the use of coercion to live off of someone else's labor. For example, consider the worker who pays $300 a month for a drug under patent, which would cost $30 in a free market. If he is paid $15 an hour, the 18 hours he works every month to pay the difference are slavery. Every hour worked to pay usury on a credit card or mortgage is slavery. The hours worked to pay unnecessary distribution and marketing costs comprising half of retail prices because of subsidies to economic centralization is slavery. Every additional hour someone works to meet his basic needs because the state tilts the field in favor of the bosses and forces him to sell his labor for less than it is worth is slavery. All these forms of slavery together probably amount to half of our working hours. If we kept the full value of our labor, we could probably maintain current levels of consumption with a work week of 20 hours. As Bill Haywood said, "For every man who gets a dollar he didn't sweat for, someone else sweated to produce a dollar he never received." Our survey also casts doubt on the position of anarchist social democrat Noam Chomsky, who is notorious for his distinction between visions and goals. His long-term vision is a decentralized society of self-governing communities and workplaces, loosely federated together, the traditional anarchist vision. His immediate goal, however, is to strengthen the regulatory state in order to break up, quote, private concentrations of power before anarchism can be achieved. But if, as we have seen, capitalism is dependent on the state to guarantee its survival, it follows that it is sufficient to eliminate the statist props to capitalism. In a letter of 4 September 1867, Engels aptly summed up the difference between anarchists and state socialists. They say, "Abolish the state, and capital will go to the devil." We propose the reverse. Exactly.